This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, we've said quite often that the Paracast is a worldwide radio show. We've talked to people from around the world, Australia. I think we did a New Zealand guest before. And of course, my co-host, J. Randall Murphy, is from Calgary, Canada. I'm in Mesa, Arizona.
Big deal.
Okay, that's one of the, I guess we call them bedroom communities outside of Phoenix, like two towns outside of Phoenix. So that's where we stand. And today we have reached out across the world again and gone 20 hours to the future to talk to Suzanne Hansen in New Zealand. And we had to work a little bit to coordinate this because, as you know, as I said, New Zealand is 20 hours ahead of us. What this means, for example, is, say we start the show on a Thursday, recording it at 2 p.m. Mountain Time, Arizona Time, Calgary Time. But it's 10 o'clock in the morning in New Zealand, Friday. And I'm going to ask you, first of all, Suzanne, this is a simple-minded question. People accuse me of that, by the way. When you're talking to people around the world, doesn't it get kind of wacky to have to consider the time differences?
Yes, it's certainly a bit strange talking to people when we're a day ahead and they're talking about the day before. So it does get a little bit mind-bending sometimes.
Definitely here to bend your mind. But we wanted to look at how UFO research is done around the world because people do hear this show around the world. So, Suzanne, you've been doing it for a while. What made you first get interested in UFOs? Did you have a personal experience?
Yes, I think there were two catalyst moments in my life that really piqued my interest in the subject. The first was when I was 8 years old, and my family and our next-door neighbours had a sighting of a UFO over a range of hills some 20 kilometres away from where we lived. It was about 8:30 on a Friday night, and my father had gone outside to shut up the garage and came running back in. It was dark, it was winter, and said, get out on the front terrace and have a look at what's out there above the ranges. So out we all trooped, and there hanging over the series of hills was a horizontal bar of light, quite a defined shape in a bright glaring orange, and there was nothing, no natural phenomenon or aircraft in New Zealand that could have created a spectacle like that. We watched it over a period of about an hour and a half, you know, just popping in and out of our house to have a look. Yes, it's still there. Notified the neighbours, and eventually about an hour and a half later, it moved off very slowly, heading down south, down the central North Island of New Zealand, and it was sighted that evening by thousands of people and was reported in our New Zealand national newspaper. So as an eight-year-old child, this was pretty fascinating, hearing the adults talking about flying saucers and UFOs. And it occurred to me when I tried to get to sleep that night that something or someone must have been flying it. And I think that really opened up my mind to looking at space and the solar system and trying to find out as much as I could as a child. The next catalyst incident that happened was when I was a young teacher in my first year of teaching as a 20-year-old, and I was returning with my flatmate from visiting friends on quite a remote farm in central North Island. We saw a light appear over some hills, two lights side by side. They flicked off, and that sort of startled us a bit as we were coming down towards a 2.5K straight from the hills. And we thought, well, it must be an agricultural aircraft with its landing lights on, coming in to land on a farm. And the reason why we couldn't see them anymore, we thought, was because the aircraft had changed direction. They then appeared virtually adjacent to us over the hills and at a much closer proximity. That scared the hell out of us because it was so sudden. They disappeared and instantaneously appeared again ahead of us. They flicked off again, and so we were arguing at that point as to what it was. I already had my mind open to the concept of UFOs, so I was saying it's a UFO. My flatmate, who was a scientist, was saying, no, it's a helicopter. But, of course, the characteristics just didn't fit a helicopter at all. And then he eventually said, whatever it is, it's coming up behind us. It came over our car, very bright light, a grinding, piercing grinding noise that got higher and higher in pitch until it was like an unbearable buzz that went right through your body. And the last thing I remember is looking at my flatmate, seeing he had dropped his hands from the steering wheel, so no one was driving the car, and feeling the car being lifted off the ground. At that point, it was a lovely sunny autumn afternoon and late afternoon, and the next thing we knew when we seemed to wake up from something was that it was pitch black, the car hit the road, lights came on, and we were at the far end of the straight. So something had removed us from that road for a period of about an hour and a half and put us back down at the end of the straight after dark, after the sun had set. That, at the age of 20, catapulted me headlong into UFO sighting research in New Zealand and contact, which was very new and very misunderstood in New Zealand in those days, in 1975.
So you're now the founder, then, of UFocus in New Zealand, which is a group in New Zealand that dedicates itself to investigating and reporting on UFO sightings. Is that, have I got that right?
Yes, that's correct. I worked with some veteran, older-aged New Zealand UFO researchers for some years as a young woman and throughout my life. But in 2000, I decided that these groups were just small groups dotted around New Zealand, and I decided that really, New Zealand needed a nationwide network where we could gather UFO sightings and coordinate them and, you know, have investigators go out in different areas and investigate the sightings. So I set up a website and set up the group by inviting just a handful of trusted people that I knew and people who were, you know, astronomers, scientists, air traffic controllers, pilots, etc. So a group that had a vested interest in this, shall we say, and they were all very willing to be part of it. Our group consists now of 8 private researchers, but we have a number of other people around New Zealand who assist us in a variety of ways, including professionals who will help us out in certain situations. So we've built up quite a network of people we communicate with both here and overseas.
What has been some of the highlights of the UFocus group? Can you give us a couple of really good examples of sightings you've investigated?
Yeah, sure. One that springs to mind immediately is a sighting by in 2012 by a neuroscientist in Auckland. I can't give too many identifying features that might reveal who he is, but he was out fishing for a bit of relaxation late at night at a beach in Northland, and it was about 11:30 at night, and he had that strange feeling that you sometimes get when you're on your own in a creepy, dark place with waves washing around you, and he felt that he was being watched. So he ignored that feeling because it's a feeling we all get from time to time, but it continued. So he turned around, and on the beach, you know, a couple of hundred meters behind him, he could see these glowing, what appeared to be green eyes. He immediately went into an analytical scientific mode, and he estimated, because he knew the beach well, how high they were and how distant they might be and how big the head might be and how big the eyes might be, etc. And he wasn't at all flustered by it. He just watched these two creatures, which the only part of them that was visible was these glowing eyes, moving around on the beach, and he said when they turned sideways, you could see the glow emanating out in front, so it may be that they had some kind of night vision eye covers, I don't know.
You know what, we need to break here, and let's continue the story, okay? This is a fascinating story of a sighting.
It is.
It really is. We got to do our break now, folks, and our guest is Suzanne Hansen with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Offer not valid in all states or where prohibited by law. Loans are subject to lender approval. See website for details.
Do you need extra cash to buy gifts or just to pay all those extra bills during the holidays? Well, now you can get cash fast this holiday season with a personal loan for up to $5,000 right from your phone or PC at 79cash.com. How fast can you get your cash? Well, with 79cash.com, our lenders can have your cash at your bank account as soon as tomorrow, regardless of your credit history. Just have a checking account and a regular source of income. Go to 79cash.com and you can get the cash loan you need now. So if you need cash fast this holiday season to buy gifts or pay all those extra bills, go to 79cash.com and get the cash you need. Visit 79cash.com. Type www.79cash.com directly into the address bar. That's 79cash.com. 79cash.com. 79cash.com.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
How well and how fast does Heart and Body Extract work to improve blood circulation? Listen.
My name is Ellis, and I am 66 years old, and I live in Jacksonville, Florida. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed as having clogged arteries. I had 70% blockage in one artery leading to my heart. They wanted me to go on Plavix, but I refused, knowing the negative side effects.
Heart and Body Extract is a unique balance, synergy, and proportion of herbs reaching from head to toe at maximum absorption around 95% at the cellular level.
Within the first month, I felt a dramatic difference. The heaviness in my legs was reduced, and within 2 months, I felt completely normal.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract. Heart and Body Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract. Call 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Suzanne Hansen was telling us of another sighting, a fascinating, detailed sighting. And we had to stop for a piece of business. Suzanne, can you continue, please?
Yes, sure. So the scientist, having sighted this, decided that he would just carry on fishing. and keep an eye on it. And eventually he saw these lights or eyes, whatever they were, floating upwards where he knew there was a cliff that was inaccessible by road. It was a cliff where you'd have to walk in quite a distance over rough farmland. To his astonishment, a few seconds later, he saw a mass of lights on an object light up in a particular configuration and in particular colours, spinning and rotating on the top of the object, and it lifted off silently with just a slight hum and went past him 100 metres or so away and became stationary out in front of him over the sea about 300 metres distant. And there the lighting configuration changed and it just hung there, appearing to be looking at him. So at this point he decided that he was getting afraid of what was happening, and he packed up his gear and left the area. And when he looked back before rounding a point and out of view, he saw that it was still hanging there. So this was quite an experience for this neuroscientist whose wife is works in psychology. It was quite a life-changing incident, and since that time, as happens with many people who've had this kind of close encounter, there's been a lot of changes in his life, and he's experienced some quite paranormal-type experiences, etc. So that's one that springs to mind. But, of course, we have a lot of historic sightings, such as the famous Kaikoura Lights, which are very well known worldwide. They were recorded on video, visually, and by hundreds of people, and was seen on radar. New Zealand has a very wide and rich amount of sightings. We have nearly 10,000 in our archive, which is quite phenomenal for such a small country in a remote part of the world.
Most people are familiar with the basic story, but I was surprised to find that people kept investigating afterwards for years, and that things started to surface. Like you were saying, there were radar reports and multiple witnesses and so on. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that, just to update our audience on how that went down?
Right. Well, historically, I'll give you a little bit of information first. In 1978 through to around about 80, there was a worldwide UFO flap, and New Zealand was involved in that too, in that we had some phenomenal sightings happening here, as were happening right around the globe. And at that time, we'd had a terrific amount of sightings up a remote valley called the Waimata Valley near the city of Gisborne on our east coast. And I happened to be living and teaching in that area, in a remote area at the time, and that's when I had a lot of the experiences that I describe in the book that I've written. But right in the middle of this flat that was centred around Gisborne, we had the Kaikoura Lights, stunning Kaikoura Lights sightings that began happening further south over the Kaikoura area through to across the Cook Strait to Wellington. And hundreds of people saw these, as they did sea sightings up in Gisborne. But there were two nights in mid-December and then late December when these lights were seen by the pilots of carrier aircraft in New Zealand, cargo aircraft. We're talking about lights that came right in around the aircraft, circled around them, flew off their wing, flew ahead of them, flew behind them. So it wasn't as the government of the day tried to depict it, and that is they came up with some unusual explanations for it, such as the lights of squid boats, the international squid boats shining on the clouds and reflecting off clouds. They said that this is what the pilots saw. They described it as lights of the city reflecting off flocks of mutton birds flying south. And this was just really insulting to the hundreds of people in New Zealand who had seen these phenomenal lights that couldn't be explained. But when these pilots came up with their sightings, and the air traffic controllers saw it in the control centre on radar in Christchurch and Wellington, it became a little bit harder for the government and the MOD of the day to explain. So there was a huge whitewash that went on. They called in scientists who gave all sorts of explanations. Some of them are obviously in league with the government at the time, and they tried to whitewash the whole affair. However, the pilots really stuck to their guns, and the film crew that was on board one of the aircraft that filmed these lights publicized that footage, and that went worldwide. So the disinformation campaign that took place in New Zealand really divided society. And I think to a certain extent that still exists in New Zealand in a lot of ways in terms of people's attitudes towards sightings. They're either thorough believers of it because they have witnessed things themselves, or they go along with the explanations given by the authorities at the time. But it's interesting that one of the air traffic controllers, John Cordy, who's now in his 80s, is actually one of my investigators in UFOX NZ and one of our aviation consultants. One of the criticisms that's been made internationally about these sightings was that the radar was faulty, and John swears black and blue it was not. It had been checked the day before, and as he said, his position as chief air traffic controller would have been on the line if he'd been running a faulty radar for any length of time. So even to this day, we see programs on National Geographic, etc., like Ancient Aliens, Invasion Earth, saying that the Kaikoura lights were caused by faulty radar, but this is certainly not the case.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be a reasonable explanation when there were multiple radar returns on these objects at the same time that they were being observed in the positions described by the radar by the pilots in the aircraft.
That's right. They appeared on the aircraft radar as well as ground radar.
Exactly. And at one point, I found this to be really quite a good point, is that one of the pilots during an interview said that they could not have been just something up in the sky far away like Venus, because he could see the object between his aircraft and the ground.
That's right. Yes.
And moving. So it's not like it that rules out any sort of astronomical object right there.
That's right. But even so, the astronomers of the day initially tried to say that it was Venus. Of course, that was very quickly discounted. But I think there was a lot of fear with the Air Force and the MOD here about what it was, and the fact that they didn't know what it was and couldn't really adequately explain it. I think there was quite a bit of fear involved, and in our research that's ongoing into the Kaikoura lights, we see that there was some American influence from military influence as well.
Let's break here. I want to ask about the American influence in secrecy around the world. Gene Randall, Suzanne, you're in the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the purest for you and your family. For over 14 years, thousands have depended on Berkey Clean Water. The Berkey guy has you covered at home, work, and on the go. With water filtration systems of every size for every budget, now GCN listeners receive 10% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN at GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. America's 45th president leads the nation in grieving for the 41st. Surrounded by family, George H.W. Bush died on Friday night at his home in Houston. When he ran for the GOP presidential nomination in 1980, he was said to have one of the most impressive resumes in politics. Congressman from Texas, UN ambassador, envoy to China, the head of the Republican Party and the director of the CIA. Though he lost to Ronald Reagan, he was asked to join the ticket.
George Bush was the candidate for vice president.
He served as a loyal vice president for 8 years before becoming the 41st president in 1989.
I, George Herbert Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
George H.W. Bush was 94. You're listening to USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Marijuana has unleashed a green gold rush across our nation. It's creating $10.8 billion in new wealth a year. And every day, it's transforming more and more Americans into millionaires. Former Speaker of the House John Boehner reveals how you could become one of them. Join him online for the American Cannabis Summit. Attendance is 100% free, but space is limited. Join online at www.acs2018.com. John Boehner and an esteemed panel will reveal which cannabis stocks are primed to deliver life-changing windfalls. Plus, they will show you how to become a cannabis angel investor, backing the hottest startups before they potentially become worth billions of dollars.
To join the American Cannabis Summit, visit acs2018.com or text JOIN to 76280. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Text JOIN to 76280. Text JOIN to 76280 now.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, so you did bring up an important point here, Suzanne. It's something that we've long wondered about, which is we know about the U.S. policy of denying that UFOs represent spaceships or even a threat to our national security. And you mentioned here something about the influence. So are the Americans persuading other countries around the world to keep a lid on this?
Well, this is only my opinion, but I think to some extent, yes. And our research shows that were people in New Zealand who were visited in later years by U.S. representatives, that some discussion did take place about the UFO problem in inverted commas. And we actually have a woman here in New Zealand whose father was well up in the aviation in New Zealand, who actually has given us a video statement. We haven't publicized it yet because she's actually writing a book. And we're letting her do that. She has come to us with the fact that that her father was part of meetings that took place with visiting American officials to do with this UFO problem. So I think New Zealand's history of UFO sightings was always one where there was great public interest, and there was even interest from the authorities and attempts to give explanations for it. But when the Kaikoura lights came along, and it was such a visible sighting in terms of the footage that went worldwide and the radar returns, the conversations between air traffic controllers and the pilots describing what they were seeing, etc., the evidence was so big that it wouldn't surprise me that it generated interest from the U.S., who were obviously trying to keep the lid on things in their own country.
Now, New Zealand, the MOD there, also investigated UFO reports, at least that's my understanding, because on your website, which is really quite a good website, actually, very well laid out and easy to follow. It says here that in 2010, they began releasing previously classified files on New Zealand UFO sightings. How has that worked out for you? Have they continued to release them, and have you found some intriguing cases in the files?
Well, in late 2008, we decided at UFOX NZ to begin lobbying the Chief of Defence at that time to just get some discussion going about the possibility of releasing files such as other Commonwealth countries, Australia, Canada, and the UK had done. I began a series of letters to and from between the Chief of Defence and myself discussing this issue, and he indicated initially that he would like to see some kind of limited release happen, as had happened in the UK. This obviously was discussed at higher levels over a period of time, and then I received in late 2009 a letter from him saying that this would take place the following year, that they were being redacted and looked at and finalised. So the first release was in 2010, just before Christmas, and the second in March 2011. It's 15 files in all. Most of the material in the files is about sightings that are already well publicised in New Zealand, like the Moreland sighting, the Kaikoura Lights, etc., some of the more stunning pilot sightings that happened earlier on. The rest of them are mainly memos or internal communications. However, we went through the files with a fine-toothed comb when they first came out, and we were given a complimentary copy. And we found, to our astonishment, that there were over 90 pilot sightings, memos about pilot sightings in there that had never been investigated. The memos had just been filed. Or if they had been investigated, the investigation outcomes were not in the files. So we know that there is clearly an intelligence file with sightings that probably may never be released, because we have indications of those sightings and some of the witness testimony on our files in our archive, but they did not appear in the MOD files. But we also know through witness testimony that the Air Force over the years investigated a lot of civilian sightings and told the witnesses they would keep quiet about it and not go to the media. If they did, the Air Force would deny any knowledge of it. And we have some of those testimonies in our archive. And those sightings were not in the files either, just a memo making a reference to them through the police or whatever body initially made contact with the witnesses. So some of the files will come out in about 50 years' time. Another lot will come out. I won't be around then, but maybe someone will be who'll be interested in looking at those, that historic data. The MOD says they're no longer collecting sightings, but we're not too sure about that. I think they would be very foolish to be ignoring some of the things that are seen in New Zealand skies that the general public sees and cannot explain.
Most of these sightings that I've run across in New Zealand, they've been at night, and they consist of just sort of vague lights off in the distance. Are there any sightings that involve something more well-defined, a clearly defined craft of some type, for example,
yes,
or daylight sighting?
Yes, there's a lot of sightings like that, but on our particular website, you're more likely to find some of those sightings on the articles page where we've written about those sightings in full. If we look at the Moreland sighting in the late 50s, a farmer's wife went out early in the morning to milk the cows and bring the cows in, and she was suddenly crossing a paddock and was suddenly surrounded by kind of a green light and looked up and saw a craft coming down. She ran to the tree line and hid, and was able to observe a small metallic craft land floating above the ground with two occupants with silver suits on, etc. So that was a very well-documented sighting that was actually investigated by the Air Force, publicised, and is in the files. But there have been a number of other sightings as well, daylight sightings. For example, the neuroscientist I spoke about earlier has also had a daylight sighting associated with the person who was with him at the time was put somehow into a switched-off state where he stopped talking. He became like a statue, completely still. So he didn't witness any of it, but the scientists did, and that's a very common thing that happens. I've seen daylight sightings myself during the Gisborne UFO flap in the late 70s, and there's numerous other sightings that have happened in New Zealand of daylight sightings, particularly around the time of the Kaikoura lights and the Gisborne flap.
Do we see sightings diminishing in recent years, or is the level the same? What do you have to say about that?
Well, there's been some research done on this by Cheryl Costa in the States, who says that sightings have diminished. But in our, I think that partly it's actually the reporting of those sightings that has diminished, because we have found that we've had fewer sightings reported to us in, say, the last 2 years. And we think the reason for this is social media and YouTube, et cetera, where people have a sighting and they immediately shout out about it on Facebook, YouTube, or wherever. They put their footage up there, and they are not so often going to groups like our own and others worldwide that want to look at it, go and take photographs of the area, look at the surroundings, look at what was happening in the area, and really look deeply into whether it was a UFO sighting or whether it could be explained in some other way. So I think that people are more blasé about the subject. It's become much more commonplace. It's not quite the sort of fun factor subject that it used to be. And I think that sightings at the moment are a little quiet, but this is a natural cycle. And Cheryl Costa in the States, who does research into sighting statistics, would agree with us that we have these cycles whereby it seems we are visited by something and we see a lot of craft and unusual aerial phenomenon, and then it tapers off and then it's quiet for a while.
We're going to be quiet for a while we wait for these announcements. With Suzanne and Randall and Jean, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery, and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
Want revenge on the common housefly? Well, after 10,000 years, someone has finally come up with a better way. The Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun, which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic and no batteries required. So much fun, you'll forget you have a wife and kids. Makes the perfect stocking stuffer. Get your Bug Assault today and save $10 on the Bug Beam Laser Combo, only at BugAssault.com.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
So, here's where we're going here. The cycle of UFO sightings. We have the flaps where they come in waves, and then we have the ebb before there's another flow. Now, over the years, Suzanne, researchers tried to find five-year cycles, seven-year cycles, things like that. And what happens is, as soon as you find a cycle that appears to work, it stops working. So have you done any better?
No, we haven't done any research into the cycles. We're just aware that it does happen. And, I mean, I've been in this for 44 years, almost 45 years now, and I have seen this wave pattern happening with the sightings. I also, looking ahead as an experiencer myself as well, I also think that this is closely aligned to what is happening on our planet as well. And I think that there is quite a lot of observation going on, but perhaps by extraterrestrial species, but perhaps less involvement in our skies. But nevertheless, I think we are still being observed.
Now, New Zealand has a number of volcanoes, and it's had earthquakes. And a recent guest we had on from California talked about what he saw and called them earthlights, the earthlight phenomena. And I'm sure you're aware of those. Couldn't a number of these lights at night perhaps be generated by some sort of volcanic or tectonic or natural volcanic activity somehow?
Well, the earth lights, or earthquake lights as we call them here, are quite different. And certainly in 2010 when we had, and 11 when we had our very tragic earthquakes here in New Zealand, and a lot of people lost their lives and their homes, people were reporting seeing shimmering coloured lights, like almost like the northern lights shimmering across the sky. And that's very different from the reports that we started getting 10 days before the earthquake even occurred. And the reports that we were getting were of clear lights in configuration, so on an object, circular circles of lights or lights in triangular formations, etc., that were clearly on an object because they weren't splitting and moving apart. So we got things that were hovering in certain places, etc., that later turned out to be the new fault line areas that they discovered after the earthquakes occurred. So these reports started coming in 10 days beforehand. We didn't know what was happening because we were getting quite a few reports from the Christchurch areas and north of Christchurch. So we just sat on them and decided, as we do with a lot of the sightings, that we wouldn't publicise them until we got a better idea of what was occurring and what we were looking at here. And also, because we don't want copycat sightings happening, we often withhold something that looks as if it might be of particular interest. So we withheld those sightings, and 10 days later we had the first of the massive earthquakes, and then following we had other terrible aftershocks, one of them being an extremely severe one that killed a lot of people. So we weren't talking about shimmering lights across the sky. We were talking about configurations of lights that moved and hovered, etc. And we never publicised those and still haven't. They are just simply on file because we felt that the people who were involved in the earthquakes in those areas had enough stress and enough to face without the thought of something in the sky that might be affecting them or watching them as well. So those were never publicized, but we have them for researchers to look at if they wish to.
That's really interesting. How have things been since the earthquakes? Have you guys recovered pretty well now, and are things back to normal?
In some ways it is, but really the rebuild in the Christchurch area is still carrying on. There are still a lot of buildings that haven't been rebuilt and may never be rebuilt. And there are still people who are suffering greatly because their homes were damaged. Some have not received insurance payouts for a variety of reasons. And a lot of the builders from overseas who were brought in to work on a project, not all, but there are some sectors of the building industry that have done very poor jobs. And so now people have been traumatized twice because their home is substandard.
I'm sorry to hear that. Returning now to the topic of unidentified flying objects, it seems that it's as if they had foreknowledge that these earthquakes were going to take place and were observing the area. One might assume that or draw or extrapolate from that. What's your impression of that?
Definitely. This is an area of research and interest that you focus. CNZ has, as well as our leaning towards aviation sightings, we also lean towards sightings that occur around the time of seismic and volcanic activity here. And we have a signed agreement of cooperation with CEFAA, which is a Chilean UFO military government and aviation group that also studies the same phenomena of lights around about the time of seismic and volcanic activity. And certainly we get a lot of reports around about this time, and I can give you another example of we were contacted by a hunter and a policeman who had been out hunting at night in the central North Island plateau where our main volcanoes are, and they had seen some lights that they thought was someone camping out in the middle of nowhere. And as they came over the hill in their vehicle with a large hunting spotlight, their spotlight shone on what appeared to be a UFO that was landed. It very quickly lit up with orange lights around its perimeter and took off completely silently, flew across in front of them completely silently, and was gone at speed. And within days of that, in that same area, we had Mount Ruapehu, which is one of our volcanoes, spilled its crater lake into a big lahar that came, a black lahar that came down the mountainside. We had another of the volcanoes after 83 years of being quiet. So there was a lot happening at that time, and we had White Island, our island volcano, rumbling off the east coast as well. So there's this very definite and clear indication that someone is watching the seismic activity on our planet.
Very interesting. So there's a correlation there then between UFO sightings and volcanic activity and earthquakes. And you've taken some time to actually separate out what you feel are the natural explanations from these other more unexplained ones, the ones that appear to be some sort of an alien craft or alien involvement.
Yes, that's correct. And I think it's important to do that and have clarity on that and be able to describe the differences. For example, the experience I talked about earlier where a light came over my car and lifted the car off the road, I wrote about that experience years ago and sort of put it out there to see what would come back in. And I had a scientist in New Zealand contact me and say, that was just ball lightning that came down and touched your car and left again. But, of course, it wasn't ball lightning, because ball lightning wouldn't have caused me to lose an hour and a half's time and suddenly sort of wake up in my car and it's pitch black after being sunny. So although you send scientists sometimes the full details for them to consider as their research, it's amazing how they can conveniently ignore some of the details you've given them in favor of what their theory is.
So what does the scientist say when you tell them you had an episode of missing time, that you had a blackout or something? That's just some kind of psychological or physiological problem?
They didn't say anything. They just came back and said it was ball lightning. So ball lightning doesn't cause missing time.
One wouldn't normally think so anyway. I suppose, you know, we could start to stretch the boundaries of psychology and say, well, perhaps it put you into a fugue state where you didn't realize what was going on and you kept on driving the car in this state that you later came out of. And these types of states have been well documented. And something like an EM field from ball lightning could conceivably be a causal factor if you believe some of the research that Persinger does or has done here in Canada. So, I mean, it's a stretch, but it's possible.
Well, it's definitely a stretch in this case, because the straight that we were on was 2.5 Ks long, and it wouldn't have taken us an hour and a half in a fugue state just to drive 2.5 Ks, so that it went from late afternoon sunshine to pitch black. But also, of course, when I heard somewhere in my mind, I heard this terrific bang, and it was like I was waking up, and at that point the car was floating. You could feel a flotation. There was no wheels on the road rumbling over our very rutted and potholed country roads. It was flotation, and the car was silent. There was no motor going. My hair was blowing all around because I actually had my window down at the time.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliffhanger, and we're going to talk about this incident in a moment with Gene, Randall, and Suzanne. You're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.